about music you love here on VOA 1.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Jill Robbins reports on inflation in Argentina. I return for a story about a law limiting the discussion of sexual and gender orientation in Florida. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about America's 30th president, Calvin Coolidge. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr. with the latest on the Russia-Ukraine war.
Large explosions and fires hit a military base in Russian-controlled Crimea Tuesday. It is the second time that the war in Ukraine has expanded to the area. Russia called the explosions at the ammunition storage center an act of sabotage, but did not say who was responsible. The incident interfered with train service and forced more than 3,000 people to leave the area. The Russian newspaper Kommersant reported local people saw black smoke rising over the airbase in the Crimean city of Gvardeskoye. Last week, 9 Russian warplanes were destroyed following several explosions at the Saki Air Base. Ukraine has not confirmed or denied responsibility for the 2 explosions, but its officials have openly cheered incidents in territory that, until last week, appeared to be safely under Russian control. The 2 incidents in the Jankoy area were about 50 kilometers from the Russian-controlled city of Kherson in southern Ukraine. Ukrainian troops have recently attacked the area, targeting supply paths for the Russian military there and ammunition storage centers. Russia annexed Crimea from Ukraine in 2014. Russia has used the area to provide supplies and support for its troops fighting in Ukraine. The Crimean Peninsula is home to Russia's Black Sea Fleet and is popular with summer visitors. Russia's demand that Ukraine recognize Crimea as part of Russia has been one of the conditions for ending the war. Ukraine has promised to drive Russians out of the peninsula and other occupied territories. More attention has also centered in recent days on the fighting near the Zaporizhia nuclear plant in southern Ukraine. Russia has controlled the nuclear center since March, but Ukrainian workers operate it. Last week, both sides blamed each other for possible risks to Europe's largest nuclear center after several shells struck the area. The United Nations called for an end to military activities around the center and a visit by nuclear inspectors to ensure its safety. Ukraine officials say up to 400,000 people would need to be evacuated in the event of an accident. Also, fighting continues in the Donbas area in the east, and in Kharkiv to the north. A Ukrainian official said an overnight attack in the area was one of the most massive shellings of Kharkiv in recent days. Some good news did come out of the area. A UN-operated ship loaded with Ukrainian grain is carrying humanitarian food aid to East Africa. It is the first such trip since the start of the war in February. An agreement supported by the UN and Turkey permits Russian and Ukrainian agricultural products to be shipped to Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. Millions of people in those areas have been threatened with hunger and poverty because of increases in food and energy prices. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Argentina reported a monthly inflation rate of 7.4% in the month of July, the highest number in about 20 years. The country's consumer prices have increased 71% over the past year, the National Statistics Agency called INDAC said recently. The latest numbers put Argentina among the countries with the highest inflation rates in the world. The effects of inflation are clear in Villa Fiorito, around 15 kilometers from downtown Buenos Aires. There, unemployed women gather in the hopes of exchanging goods for food. Such exchanges that do not involve money are known as bartering. Every afternoon, women set up their blankets and lay out their goods, including clothes and toys. Their hope is to exchange the goods for food to feed their families. The economic problems are likely to get worse before they get better in Argentina. Experts predict that inflation for the whole year will likely reach 90% or higher. 31-year-old Soledad Bustos sets up shop in the Villa Fiorito fair every afternoon while one of her children is in school, and another is under the care of her sister. Bustos offers clothing like jeans, leather boots, sneakers, and shirts that she either took out of her own home or bought through the social media service Facebook. In exchange, she asks for powdered milk. "I can't get to the end of the month. The money isn't enough," Bustos, a single mother, said. Bustos is unemployed and says she receives around $255 a month from the state. That amount is not enough to feed her family. Bartering events started spreading in Argentina after the economy collapsed in 2001. But such events have increased in recent years as the inflation rate has remained high. "This is living hand to mouth," said Maria Inez Pereira, 48, the organizer of the event that runs Mondays through Saturdays. "Whatever they obtain today, they take it straight to the dining table." For safety reasons, only women can take part in bartering. Most of the exchanges have already been previously arranged on Facebook or WhatsApp. Although there is no set value for the used goods, Pereira set a top price of $2 for each piece of clothing. As an example, she pointed to a pair of leather sneakers that could be traded for a packet of sugar, cooking oil, flour, and a local tea. Fernandez's administration has blamed the high inflation rate in July on a currency crisis caused by speculative movements that tried to generate a crisis of uncertainty and push a devaluation, Gabriella Cerruti, the government's spokeswoman, said recently. Cerruti's statement came before the inflation rate was released. The increase of the country's already high inflation rate comes shortly after the government had 3 economy ministers within 1 month. Experts and members of Fernandez's administration expect the August inflation rate to be similar to July. That is because of increases in prices for public transport and energy. In Villa Fiorito, Bustos said she and her fellow barterers are centering their efforts on surviving. I'm Jill Robbins.
Students in the southern U.S. state of Florida returned to school last week under a new law that some social activists have criticized. The law is called the Parental Rights in Education Act. The law says it supports the right of parents to make decisions regarding the upbringing and control of their children. But critics call it the Don't Say Gay law. They worry about the bill's effects on gay students and their families. The law limits discussion of sexual and gender orientation subjects in classrooms with young children. Under the law, students in kindergarten through grade 3 may not be taught about sexual or gender orientation. The law also bars public schools in the state from teaching about sexual or gender orientation that is not age-appropriate or developmentally appropriate. The law also permits parents to bring legal action against school systems if they disagree with what they teach. We will make sure that parents can send their kids to school to get an education, not an indoctrination, said Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in March, when he signed the law. He called teaching sexual subjects to very young students a way to sexualize young children. The group Parents Defending Education is based in Virginia. It says on its website that subjects like sex education and critical race theory are not only at war with basic American values, but also with childhood. Critics of the Florida law say it is unclear and difficult to understand. The Florida Department of Education says the part of the law that limits discussion to age-appropriate or developmentally appropriate materials will go into effect when guidance is released from the state. Will Larkins is a high school student in Florida. The New York Times published an opinion piece he wrote about the new law. He said it will make teachers less likely to talk at all with students about gender identity and sexuality. He added, "For many of my friends in dangerous situations because of their sexuality or gender identity, school has been a place where they could be themselves." President Joe Biden's administration called the law discrimination, plain and simple, in a July statement. The statement added that it encourages bullying and threatens students' mental health, physical safety, and well-being. The Biden administration also expressed concern about dangerous nationwide activities of Republican lawmakers. It said they are targeting LGBTQI+ students, educators, and individuals. On its website, NPR said that more than 12 states have introduced legislation similar to Florida's bill. A law passed in Alabama that also bans discussion of gender and sexual identity before fifth grade. Ava Goldfarb is a sex educator and professor at Montclair State University in New Jersey. She told VOA that the bills are an all-out assault on sex education. She said sex educators have been wrongfully accused of sexualizing young children, and that instruction is already age-appropriate. The purpose of sex education is to protect young people from being sexually exploited and having bad sexual health outcomes, she said. Goldfarb added that it is important to have early, age-appropriate discussions of subjects like sex and gender identity. She said they will be prepared to discuss those topics in more detail when they are in high school. The reason you need to start sex education in elementary school is for the same reason you start teaching math in elementary school, she said. Christine So Young Harley is the director of Washington, D.C.-based CECUS, a sex education organization that supports teaching gender and sexual orientation. She said that when students do not receive teaching on these subjects in school, they often turn to the internet or social media services like TikTok for more information. She said some information online can be informative, but it is often misleading or incorrect. So Young Harley also said internet searches for sex and gender topics often expose kids to pornography. She said 73 other bills have been introduced that protect parents' rights and limit discussion of divisive concepts. That could mean anything from sexuality to discussions of racism or American history. These are bills that attempt to weaponize parents' religious beliefs or personally held opinions to coerce schools to accept teachings that fall outside of normal ideas, So Young Harley said.
Presidents. Today we are talking about Calvin Coolidge. He was the vice president under Warren Harding. When Harding died suddenly, a little more than 2 years into his term, Coolidge became president. Coolidge is linked to two opposing ideas. The first idea is quiet restraint. The president's nickname was Silent Cal. He rarely took part in casual conversation. And as a leader, he often thought the best action was not to take any action. Many voters liked his cool style. Coolidge quickly earned a public image as a serious man who did not spend money or words easily. But Coolidge is also linked to a period in U.S. history known as the Roaring Twenties. In those years, the 1920s, the American economy was generally good. Many people spent money on exciting things, such as the still new automobile, and on entertainment, including alcoholic drinks, cigarettes, and dancing. Creative expression such as jazz and Art Deco architecture became popular. Calvin Coolidge is often given credit for helping fuel the Roaring Twenties with his pro-business economic policies. But some historians caution against remembering Coolidge's business freedom policies too fondly. They say he helped create the conditions for the severe economic depression that followed his presidency. Calvin Coolidge and his sister were born and raised on a farm in the northeast state of Vermont. Coolidge spoke highly of both his parents. His father owned a store and also held local political offices. He had a public image for honesty, public service, and thrift. Young Calvin Coolidge helped his father in the store and hoped to be just like him. Coolidge also admired his mother's strong character. He was 12 years old when she died, and he wrote that losing her was the greatest grief that can come to a boy. 6 years later, his sister also died. Their deaths made young Calvin Coolidge even more serious than he already was. But Coolidge was also known for his wit, a kind of humor that often depends on wordplay or intelligence. As a student at Amherst College in Massachusetts, Coolidge became known as an able and funny public speaker. That skill helped him rise in politics. He began with lower-level offices in Massachusetts and later served as that state's governor. Along the way, he married Grace Anna Goodhue, a teacher for the deaf. She was known to be warm and social, and the couple were reported to have a loving marriage. They went on to have two sons. In 1920, the Republican Party nominated Coolidge to be its vice presidential candidate. In general, voters liked the Republican ticket. They were ready for a change after the reform policies and international engagement of Democrat Woodrow Wilson. Sure enough, the Republicans won the election in a landslide. But Coolidge did not enjoy the office of vice president very much. He had little power in the government. During meetings, he often remained silent. One summer night, he and his wife were on vacation in Vermont. His father, Colonel Coolidge, woke them up in the middle of the night with some dramatic news. President Harding had died. Reporters quickly gathered at the small farmhouse. Colonel Coolidge had not put electricity in the house, so everyone watched by the light of an oil lamp. Colonel Coolidge was a public official. He used the family Bible and a copy of the Constitution to swear in his son as the 30th U.S. president. Then the country's new leader did a very sensible thing. He went back to bed. President Coolidge believed in limited government, especially limited federal government. He permitted state and cabinet officials to decide as many issues as they could. Coolidge used his authority to focus mostly on the country's economy. At the time he took office, the U.S. was at the start of an economic boom. Coolidge tried to maintain that prosperity. He did not regulate businesses too much, and he sharply reduced taxes, especially on the wealthy. By nearly every measure, the economy grew. But the policies also widened the divide between rich and poor Americans and put the country's economy in a risky situation. More and more people began to invest their money in the stock market. Some put their dollars in dangerous investments. And business owners produced more goods than most members of the public could really afford. Increasingly, people borrowed money on credit to pay for luxury goods. At the same time, the economic situation of many American farmers was getting worse. The weather had been unusually dry in some places, and the price of food was falling. Farmers asked the federal government for assistance. But Coolidge rejected several bills that might have helped them. The bills had other problems, Coolidge reasoned, and he did not think that the federal government should intervene in the situation. So the farmers continued to suffer. But most voters remained supportive of Coolidge. Even though the president was considered a quiet person, he spoke often on the radio, appeared in a talking film, met with reporters regularly, and posed in funny costumes for photographers. He easily won election in 1924. Historians believe he could have won another term, too, in 1928. But Coolidge chose not to seek office. Some believed he was too saddened by the death of his teenaged son. Shortly after Coolidge became president, the boy had been playing tennis and slightly wounded his toe. The wound became infected. The infection spread to the boy's blood. A few days later, he died. Although Coolidge continued his presidency, he later said the joy had gone from the job. But when he decided not to seek re-election, he did not talk about his feelings. Instead, he simply wrote a note to reporters saying, "I do not choose to run for president in 1928. His Secretary of Commerce, Herbert Hoover, was elected instead. Coolidge retired to his home in Massachusetts and led a quiet private life. President Coolidge was well-liked by most Americans. Later presidents, including Ronald Reagan, sought to follow some of his economic policies. But many historians have questioned those policies. They say that Coolidge did not pay enough attention to the situation of farmers. And they say the stock market was rising too fast. 7 months after Coolidge left office, the U.S. economy collapsed. The country was still deep in the Great Depression when Coolidge passed away. He died, quietly, of course, during an afternoon nap at the age of 60. His will was but a single sentence. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.